Thanks. So this little presentation will talk about the understanding that the applicants had of the advanced practice health educator subcompetencies by going through this process of the certification. And as you see from this slide and the other slides in the four presentations, we have multiple people involved in this project. So this gives, want to recognize the collaborators that we've had in the process, which has taken probably over a two-year period to work with. I don't have any disclosures. From the first presentation, and I think from the four that we'll see today, that I think it's fair to be able to say that this was an efficient process and it was an effective process to assess professional practice in the field. We know that we don't have very sophisticated measures to say that, but again, in toto, if we look at all four of these presentations and the work that we did, we felt that this was really a good tool to use to assess practice and in a unique way. Again, we've mentioned that when we went through this process, we really felt it would give us insight into how the certified health education specialist really understood, and a key word here is applied, the subcompetencies through this mechanism we're using in terms of documentation. And this is something that we really haven't been able to drill down to take a closer look at their understanding, and I'll work through that a little bit more in terms of moving from something cognitive to a real application that you have. So we want to sort of get beyond understanding. Now, we're all in the education field. We know when we write our behavioral objectives, we're not supposed to use the term understand, so we'll get more action items related to that or appreciate. So if we look at the Bloom's taxonomy levels here that we're familiar with, there's probably agreement that if you're doing standardized testing, that that's going to be very knowledge-based. And then maybe some comprehension. We think that EDO positions up here a little bit higher in terms of application and analysis. Now, I'm using the term higher because of the graphic, but higher doesn't necessarily mean better. It's just, this is Bloom's taxonomy. It's very well recognized. So there are different mechanisms. And I like to liken this to clinical practice in the way you do academic formation for, let's take, for example, nursing. So if somebody's in a formative state for nursing, there will be three types of measurements that they'll have. One will be didactic, so they take courses and they take exams and quizzes, what have you. The other will be clinical, direct observation, action. The third one is actually standardized testing. And if you look at the licensing board, where they take what's called the NCLEX board that the states require, the states doesn't come in and look at what a nursing student does. That's up to the faculty and the provider. So I'm just pointing out that what we think we have here is with documentation, it kind of sits up there. Someone can argue that maybe sometimes it gets even into synthesis. So I think that's where we are in terms of Bloom's taxonomy. So the heart of this presentation is the issues that we have identified. And I don't like that word issues because sometimes colloquially someone will say, well, they have issues. My youngest sister was the first one to introduce me many years ago to this term issues. And it really struck me, oh, she's got issues. But the interesting thing is that this is the term that's used in accreditation of other disciplines that I've seen, whether it's nursing, whether it's PA, whatever. They say, do you have a mechanism to deal with student issues? And I do a lot of work as Assistant Dean of Academic Affairs on student issues. So generically, I haven't found a better term. We want to just maybe call these issues. So that's why I'm using this graphic here of something that's very foggy, kind of eerie, and it fits well with today being Halloween and in the San Francisco fog. So I think I've gotten all things here. So specifically, what subcompetencies were not well understood by those practicing health education? And what was the level and the nature of concern of some of the applicants with the 100 words? And then finally, what were some of the issues that we had when they were showing the documentation related to this? So the area of analysis here is administrative. I'm not really going to talk about that. We're going to see something, what we would call the congruency among the areas of responsibility, competencies, and subcompetencies. A little bit about the 100-word description, the appropriate documentation, and then the match between the stated activity and documentation. And another one here that we want to keep in mind is, what was the ability of the recommenders to identify issues? So if we found issues, were the recommenders able to point out some issues as well? Here are the macro numbers, and you've seen some of these already. Now, when we look at our universe of what we're examining here, it's each of the, there's 834 applicants that are in this group that we're looking at. Those were approved. So we have to multiply that by four because they use four areas of study. So that we found 148 individuals, or 18% of the applicants here, that had issues, if we're using that word. So that comes into the 148 is 18%. I don't have a sense of putting any qualifier to that to say whether it's low or high or what, because this is a process that we haven't been through before. When we take a look at the occurrences, it's 328, then that comes a little bit under 10%. So the answer, who had issues? Well, about 18% had issues. How many issues were there? A little bit under 10%. So that gives you a feel for the macro level. Now let's drill down again a little bit more, taking a look at the actual subcompetencies. All right, this first level analysis is congruency. I have a question mark here because we just can't really explain how... Now it is a small number of people, right? It's only 30 applicants, but 30 applicants could not put together that area 7 would have to mean a competency or a subcompetency. You're really not dealing with competencies here. So what we saw was an area 7, when you remember the application and they gave a subcompetency, let's say a 5-point whatever, that's incongruent. So these have to be consanguineous. We just don't have an explanation as to why that happened. What we saw in Blossom's presentation would say, did we not communicate it, those sort of things. So we can look into that survey. But we're kind of in a fog a little bit with there. How about the 100-word description? We had 65 did not write a description that clearly showed how they related the advanced level subcompetency to the activity. This translated into 131 activities. Again, 65 people had a little bit of trouble with the 100 words. What did we see? Sometimes we just didn't see a whole lot of information. We know that 100 words is not a lot. Again, our survey of how people felt, they felt pretty much that they were able to do that. Sometimes it just was the clarity wasn't there. And when we were reviewing these, we felt like we really need to give people a chance to clarify exactly what's talking about. And that's the errata process that was mentioned earlier. These are the areas where the subcompetencies where the 100-word issues didn't fit and need more clarity. Lead advocacy initiatives, synthesize assessment findings, provide expert assistance, create training, use of best practices, and promote collaboration among stakeholders. So we'll highlight those exact words a little bit more in the end of the presentation. But let's move to the documentation phase. Now notice what's happening. This is now ramped up. If we go back to the slides, let's look at the number of people. Incongruency is probably the lowest level of understanding. So we have 30 people. When you bump up the level of demonstrating this, we then went up to 65 people. See how that went up, 100 words? And then getting the documentation, which is a higher level of demonstration, then went up to 105 applicants. And that kind of fits. So you have the congruency, okay, a little bit easier, the 100 words, even though not challenging, then the documentation. And all this is going to translate into the submissions that usually ramps up a little bit higher. So we did have 105 applicants who had a challenge and didn't have what we felt was clarity in demonstrating their advanced competence. This is the top 10 list of the subcompetencies where people had challenges and the number of instances. So provide expert assistance. And some of these surprise us because That's one that I think all of us would agree that's pretty common. Disseminate research findings, synthesize assessment findings, use assessment results to inform the planning process, lead advocacy issues, initiatives. We had a lot of problems with the advocacy area and the stakeholder area, and that comes up as well. So this is a list of those sub-competencies. Now, there were more of them. Remember that in Linda's presentation, we weren't sure in the beginning, but every sub-competency, and there's 61, was used. So people were able to see all of them, and this is the top 10 where people had trouble. If you ask ourselves, well, what about the recommenders? If people had issues, did the recommenders flag those as issues? And we found out generally they did not. So what this shows is pretty much the recommenders gave everybody an okay on this, except for two of the cases. What that translated into is 407 of the recommenders who are CHESS certified missed an issue. And again, that doesn't mean that in the end the person didn't get certified. We were just, it's just kind of a question that you have out there, how would they miss that? And then it shows the non-CHESS missing as well. So there's pretty much the statistical analysis, we have to do proportionality, but it's pretty clear that because everybody pretty much went through, that whether you're a CHESS recommender or a non-CHESS recommender, you did not pick up an issue. And conjecture could be, well, somebody's not going to say something bad about a colleague. They did have an opportunity to do the macro. But we're even talking about the level of how would they miss that there's not congruency. And how did they miss the 100 words? And to give you a concrete example of an issue that is, again, questionable, is one of the subcompetencies was that you would send an abstract when you did a presentation like we are here today. And you would have an applicant who said an article. So an article is not the same as a presentation. So that's a big question, is how do you miss something like that? So what are the implications? It's evident that more needs to be done to improve the understanding of subcompetencies for CHESS. The EDO review showed that some CHESS, some, not all, I mean, again, it's probably fair to say that it's a small number, even those practicing at the advanced level, failed to articulate how subcompetencies are used in practice. And such a shortcoming is less likely to be identified through standard testing practice. So I think this is a powerful statement for what EDO can do. EDO review showed that some CHESS failed to recognize issues with experience documentation. Okay, now I know we've been showing statistics, and we have these numbers, 7.5.2, and we have these statistics. But here's this slide I thought was helpful to say, would an advanced health education specialist have difficulty defining these common terms? I think we would agree that advocacy we use a lot. We use stakeholders. We use training objectives. I mean, we're in the education field. Results of assessment. Should they be able to tell the difference between a conference presentation and an abstract? Expert assistance and fiscal resources. So if we just took these terms, how is it that they were having trouble demonstrating some of these examples? So to take the statistics away, these are nominally some of the challenges of the areas that we saw. The implications, then there's always room for improvement for the practitioners. They need to not only have a command of the content knowledge, again, Bloom's taxonomy, but be able to apply this knowledge and synthesize information. The practitioner needs to move content knowledge through a process to produce an outcome, and the practitioner should be able to articulate through EDO evidence of practice. So I think what we can do to improve this is that look at our continuing education. And here are three steps that we think are very easily done. And if we can get our continuing education to shift out of just planning conferences to take a look at the subcompetencies, and it would be really neat to be able to identify a couple subcompetencies and plant continuing education around that. So, for example, one approach I would use is if we're going to have a keynote speaker or a workshop, that we would say to that person, not just we want a topic on advocacy or we want a topic on stakeholders in your project, but take the actual sub-competency, send that to the speaker and say, in your presentation, you're an expert in this area, make sure that you address for the audience this particular sub-competency and how you're able to do that. And we think that that's pretty easily done, but something that normally when we're doing continuing ed, that's not really thought of. This is an opportunity to continue the dialogue. We have not only the presentations we're doing here today, but a number of articles coming out for this particular topic. This article is accepted and ready to be in press, and it will be published in the American Journal of Health Education. And here are the collaborators that we have on that. Several people are here today that would be able to answer those questions.